Welcome to the River Forest Village Board meeting. This is our regular board meeting, January 8th. It's just almost 7 o'clock. I don't know, I have 6:58, but let's call it 7:01. Okay. If I can ask the clerk to please take the roll call.
Certainly. Trustee Corsini.
Here.
Trustee Cargi.
Here.
Trustee Vasquez.
Here.
Trustee Conti.
Here.
Trustee Hennick.
Here.
Trustee Gibbs.
Here.
President Aducey.
Here. If I can ask everyone to stand, say the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
To the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, no citizens' comments, so we're here for, well, you've got, let's do the swearing in first. Is that good for you guys? Okay. So I'm very excited about swearing in our next chief of police. You're up next here, since we are going to wait for elected officials. Oh, all right, I can do that. So we're excited to have Deputy Chief O'Shea take on the chief role. This has been, frankly, the most logical decision for us because he has served, you know, the deputy role very well, and so we're very pleased that. You know, he's going to be our next chief of police. We look forward to his leadership and his ideas. I know one of the things that he's really, and I'll just announce it, he just took the leadership on it just recently, is announcing hosting the first community crime prevention meeting, which will be held on Wednesday, January 24th at 4:30 right here in this community room. And it's really, the hope is to bring together the River Forest residents and police officers and talk about now not only how we can prevent crime, but also just general issues about solving crime, too. So we're looking forward to that first community event. It's going to be, I think, your legacy in terms of your role as chief, and we're excited about that. So, no further ado, I'm going to have our clerk. Do you have everything?
Sure.
Kind of? All right. So we don't do this often, so we're kind of rusty, but we want to do it right for Jim. Okay.
How would you like it?
I'm fine right here.
Okay. Was it enough to get his best side for the picture?
Yeah, you tell me. How would you like it?
Good.
Okay.
We'll flip that
Please
point.
Raise your right hand
and repeat after me. I, James O'Shea.
I, James O'Shea.
Having been appointed to the office of police chief.
Having been appointed to the office of police chief.
In the village of River Forest.
In the village of River Forest.
In the county of Cook.
In the county of Cook.
Aforesaid, do solemnly swear.
Aforesaid, do solemnly swear.
That I will support the Constitution of the United States.
That I will support the Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the State of Illinois.
The Constitution of the State of Illinois.
And that I will faithfully discharge.
That I will faithfully discharge.
The duties of the office of police chief.
The duties of the office of police chief.
According to the best of my ability.
According to the best of my ability.
Congratulations.
I'll try to make this brief.
I know it's a long agenda tonight, and I know you guys want to get through it. I want to thank the village president and board of trustees for their confidence and support. This also includes the village administrator and his team. I'm truly honored and enthusiastic about this new opportunity to lead the great members of this professional organization. I would like to thank my wife, Lori, and my daughter, Grace, for their ongoing support and understanding, especially when professional commitments and family time commit conflict with each other. I would like to recognize my father and brother who are out here tonight. They've always been a positive resource and sounding board for ideas, especially in the areas of law enforcement and municipal government operations. Now I'd like to recognize the hardworking and community-focused members of the River Forest Police Department that are out here tonight. Each one of them are true leaders who are highly trained and dedicated to serve this great community. And they're always willing to promote and foster relationships with the public that begin with mutual respect and dignity, especially for those who have felt devalued in the past. I'd like to recognize and thank some of our law enforcement and municipal partners that are here tonight. I believe we have Melrose Park in the room, Elmwood Park, Forest Park, and we have the supervisor, 4th District, Cook County State's Attorney's Office, Dan Gross, sitting in the back. And I don't want to forget the Honorable Judge William Gamboni. Yeah. Bill has been a friend over the years, and some 24 years ago when I was going through the process, Bill was your chairman on the Police and Fire Commission and was able to offer some guidance along the way, and I think it paid off. I also would like to thank some members of the community that have come out, that have taken time out from their busy schedules, and also former Chief Greg Weiss, who's sitting very casual here tonight, and once again, we'll miss his direction and guidance in the 30 years of honorable service that he provided to the village is something I'll continue to look up to. I know that one of President Aducey's main tenets includes active public safety as a key component to a safe and thriving community. We share those sentiments and will continue to utilize community problem and predictive policing strategies to serve the village, reduce violent and property crimes, provide timely response to both emergency and non-emergency calls, ensure the best interests of the community are kept in mind with regard to arrest situations and those scenarios where alternatives can be part of progressive best practices. We'll also continue to participate in regional task forces and other groups to expand our capabilities and create true partnerships. We'll also enhance our communication with the residents and business community through GIS crime mapping and expanded use of social media. And we'll also help provide safe passage for our children to and from school or to other community events. And we'll help provide community caretaking for those suffering from the opiate addiction, mental illness, and some conditions that were previously looked at as sometimes just police arrest situations. We'll also help individuals and families with managing dementia and Alzheimer's situations, especially those through our recently implemented ID bracelet program. And finally, and let's not forget that all River Forest public safety employees, and that includes police and fire, need to go home safe to their families after each tour of duty. Thank you again for this great opportunity, and I look forward to working with all of you.
Thank you, Jim. Before I get to the other elected official comments, again, I just want to reiterate, it was a logical choice for the board and I to choose Jim to be our next chief. He's proven time and time again that he has the leadership, the respect of not only the residents, but the officers here in River Forest, and that takes a lot. You have institutional memory. That is important as you move into your next role. As I mentioned earlier, you've already started out with your first meeting in the community, which is very impressive. So I am confident that you are going to be one of the best chiefs that we've had here in River Forest. So I welcome you, and I thank you for taking this role on. So thank you. I'll ask now to maybe begin with Trustee Gibbs.
It's always a risk when somebody gives me a microphone. You guys know that. I'm completely confident that crime will now go down in River Forest simply because he's related to half of the people in town. I just want to congratulate you on your becoming chief. I know this was a goal of yours, and you pressed on from day one to achieve that goal. And if that same tenacity is put toward the execution of that job, I'll be very confident in your ability. So thank you all for coming, wife, daughter, Grace. Thank you. Nice job with the pin, no bloodshed. It is very important that not only the blue uniforms, but the red uniforms as well, feel appreciated by the citizens of the town. Every opportunity I have, I try and take that. And again, I'll say that what you provide for our citizens cannot ever be thoroughly given back, certainly not by words, but certainly from our gratitude, and that's all. And to the family, the sacrifices you make because he's with us instead of you, please don't ever feel that that's not appreciated here.
Patty? I would also like to congratulate our new chief. As a resident, I've certainly appreciated getting to know you and working with you a little bit from that side. As a trustee, I look forward to working with you even more and getting to know you more. I know you've done a great job for our community, and I'm sure you'll continue. And then other than that, I just want to wish everyone a happy and healthy 2018.
Yep. Congratulations, Chief O'Shea. You have earned the respect of the force of everyone you've worked here with in Village Hall, the administration, and the board, and we're thrilled that you can take the helm as chief. It's always optimal when you could promote from within the force. It was terrific that Chief Weiss was promoted within. We're so happy now that you are following those footsteps, and I know you'll be grooming someone to come in after you, and it's just the best for River Forest. It's best for our administration and staff and board, and we're just thrilled that this has become the trend, and we're so happy that you've taken the lead on this, and congratulations, and we wish you best of luck. We will do everything we can to make your life as easy as possible.
I just want to say congratulations, Chief O'Shea, and then just reiterate what the trustees have already said. It's a benefit to all of us, and River Forest is really fortunate to have you at the helm.
I echo everybody's comments. I also want to congratulate you, Chief, as well as the family for this accomplishment, and I also look forward to working with you. Happy New Year to everybody else, and just a friendly reminder, there are people already who liked our Village River Forest Facebook. Please spread the word. There are some people who don't know about it or don't know enough to go on the website, on the Facebook, and click like so that they can get regular updates from the Village. So,
good point. Thanks, Russ.
Congratulations, Chief. I said last month that you got big shoes to fill, and I think you're more than capable of filling those shoes. So I wish you the best of luck.
Happy New Year to everyone. Thank you for coming. It's a great show of support. Congratulations, Chief O'Shea. I love the blue dress uniform. Make sure you wear that more often. It's very becoming. Thank you to Lori and Grace. Grace, the last time we saw you, we were just a little bit smaller when Dad got promoted to Deputy Chief, and you're certainly growing into a beautiful young lady. So congratulations about your dad and your husband. We always appreciate the service that our men and women in blue and our firefighters and all people that work for our village, the sacrifices that they make, and the families are always behind them, and we always appreciate that. So we look forward to working with you. I'm sure we'll have great successes, and thank you again for taking the role on. We appreciate it.
Thank you. I've got a few more announcements, but before I move to it, I want to thank our neighboring police officers who are here in support of Jim. I think that shows great unity and great collaboration, so thank you for being here. We appreciate it. And again, as the trustee said, the families are very important to us, so thank you, Lori and Grace, for being here in support of your husband and your father. So it's wonderful things. Let me just report a few more things. I want to say we do have another gentleman in the room, Ed Condon, who I'd like to say congratulations on being a notable villager of the year. I think that's a good thing. I know it's based on some real important issues like equity, and I know you're trying to support the One District, One Book initiative, which I think is an excellent initiative. So congratulations on that award. I also want to congratulate President Carroll, Donna Carroll, who is the president of Dominican University, for being named Dominican University Villager of the Year from Wednesday Journal. She is the CEO of Dominican University, and it was based on some very good one. Not only had she become a sanctuary campus, but she also was ranked within 20 of the best colleges from U.S. News and World Report, which I think is a great distinction for the university and a wonderful distinction for River Forest. So congratulations both to President Carroll and Superintendent Ed Condon. Also, along the same lines with Superintendent Condon, he and I and Eric and President Martiri and Anthony met on December 21st to discuss safe routes. We'll talk more about that in our next board meeting. But the results of the meeting was that we both mutually agreed that we as a a community need to look at all routes that children can walk safely to school, not just for our public schools, but also for our private schools. So we're going to go ahead and do an initiative that will help us identify those routes, help us identify what crossing guards would be needed, and try to optimize the crossing guards that we have. That expenditure will come to you for approval next board meeting. So that happened. And the last thing I want to kind of show you all, guys, is we're very proud of a lot of development that we're trying to get underway. And I was just flipping through a magazine, Chicago Magazine, and inside it was the flyer for Sotheby's real estate. And there we are right here, River Forest. So if you're looking for a condo, 3 to 4 bedroom condos, we're going to be developing it right here on Lake and Lathrop. Anyway, so I think we made print, which is nice. That's all I have. So we'll go on to the next agenda item, which is the consent agenda, which if I could, this could be your cue to leave if you like and go have a go have a drink, because we'll go on to our next. So I'll wait until you guys. Yep, Jim, of course, his group is all going over to Francesca's for a drink. So
okay.
He asked me to tell everyone to please join him for a drink at Francesca's after we're done.
Okay.
So we got to hurry. I'm not quite sure who's buying.
Okay.
So Ed, I know that you and Anthony came in gasping when you saw the room. Yeah. All of a sudden, I had a white face, and I'm like, oh, my fish picks. All right, I think most of them moved out. So we'll go ahead and begin the consent agenda. If I can get a motion to move the consent agenda from A. Yeah,
I move to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
All right. Any questions or comments regarding...
Ask a question?
Yep. Okay, we already got a problem with Jim.
They're all here to see Greg.
It's hilarious. Okay, yes, Trustee Conte?
Yes. I have a question regarding item number C. It looked like the contract was probably the school year, but it's almost 3.5 months in, and I was just curious. It goes from September 24th of 17 to September of 18. And have they already started, and will they complete it by the end, and what if they don't?
Yeah, we've already started the work, so the MOU is trailing behind the work, so we've already had about 2 or 3 meetings, and we're pretty close to trying to get things pinned down in terms of the metrics for this year. So, yeah.
And I had a question just to highlight, maybe you could just, as we talk today, just give us an explanation of the benefit to the village for entering into this agreement and the types and scope of the information that we're going to be learning from this consortium.
Sure. So performance metrics and performance management is something that's very important to this, or for my administration and organization. You can see the awards on the wall there that reflect some of that. So one of the things a bunch of the other communities in that group, various managers were talking about, you know, certainly we don't want to collect data just for the sake of collecting data. That doesn't really serve us any purpose. And we try to collect data in order to help us make better decisions, right, business decisions for the organization. So one of the things we decided to try to tackle was to look at challenges within operating departments and then what type of data can we use to help solve those problems. So the group got together. They went to RFP on a consultant to help us with that. They chose the University of Illinois at Chicago and their public policy, public administration department. And so they're working with us initially to look at police departments. And so all these different municipalities, which are of different sizes, different scopes, complexities, all sat down in these early meetings and said, okay, what are the issues that are all germane to us? And how do we go about trying to compare ourselves to one another? And then how do we go about trying to solve various issues that we're all facing? So the first question was, what issues are we all facing? And so two of the main issues, and it's been at these meetings, it's been myself, John Paper, management analyst, and then Chief O'Shea, who had been deputy chief at the time, was attending those as well. And so two areas that we're really looking at are recruitment and retention of police officers, and then dealing with mental health issues within police departments. Those are areas within that 15, 16, whatever it is, groups of municipalities. Every town is facing those issues. And so now as we move forward, we're going to take a step back and say, okay, then what are the problems that we're trying to solve, and then what data do we pull and measure to try to solve those problems, and that's what we're going through right now.
Yeah, the concern I had with this was the group is so disparate. You know, Schaumburg is not River Forest. Now,
sure.
I'm just wondering how you're going to get meaningful data given all the other factors that bear on those questions, given the differences of all the communities. That was the one thing I know it's benchmarking. You know, the goal is to sort of somehow standardize it. I just think it's a pretty challenging task.
Yeah, there's a couple other initiatives that have been successful in the country. The one that comes to mind is Arizona, and I don't know the municipalities off the top of my head. But they were of varying sizes and degrees. Certainly there's and they've been successful, certainly there's going to be a handicap to this, if you will, for lack of a better term, that the sheer volume of Schaumburg is not going to equal the volume of a River Forest, let's say. But what I find, what I found refreshing and interesting is that the issues, though, are the same. So every town in that group, regardless of size, is having issues with getting quality officers, getting them through FTO, retaining existing officers, and then also talking about issues that they're facing and issues dealing with mental health are challenges that every municipal police department is dealing with. So Schaumburg may go on 10 times as much as we are, but we're still having the same issues and trying to account for them.
Was the cost apportioned by population, or is it everyone paying the same?
Everyone paying the same rate.
And then the other question I had was, how was the various communities chosen to join? Was it valid? Whoever wanted to sign up could?
Correct,
was
yeah.
Was recruitment? Because I was sort of surprised that Hinsdale wasn't on the list. I mean, there were communities I would have sort of expected to be there that weren't.
So this was the first go-around. So in the first iteration, we're just tackling the police department. The hope is each year we would add another department, fire, public works, and then that the group would grow as well. So, you know, there are a lot of towns that will jump in the deep end first, and there's others that will dip their toe in, and there's others that will wait. I actually mentioned that to our colleagues in the West Central Municipal Conference today, that although we're moving forward, once we complete the first round, if other towns want to get on board, we would definitely be open to that. We would like to see this thing grow each year.
So you anticipate being pretty open-ended in terms of
how long you would do this, and then if more came in, it would perhaps lessen the costs for everybody, but otherwise this could be an anticipated expense.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we want to try to make this work, and I think the way that you try to solve problems and issues is trying to tackle them from different perspectives. If we keep doing the same thing over and over again, you're led with the same results. So, I'm not going to sit here and promise that this is going to be a raging success. We're going to go into it, and we're going to certainly try for that. I think it's a very unique way to try to take on some of the challenges that we're facing.
Eric and I kind of chatted about this a little bit, and the interesting thing about it is that we've been putting together performance metrics for all of us to be looking at for as long as I can remember, at least been on the board. And so the interesting is that we're not really measuring ourselves against anything other than ourselves. And so what intrigued me about this opportunity is it did give us an opportunity to look at other municipalities, and although Tom, you bring up a good point, it doesn't. The problems are the same. They're just the gravity of the problem or the size of the problem might be slightly different or bigger or less, but the problem is still the same. I mean, whether it's mental health issues, police recruitment, police protection, all of those are issues that every village has. So I understand your question, but I looked at it as. This is a good way to begin to start really benchmarking ourselves against other, villages and municipalities, and I think that's a good thing.
No, I didn't mean to suggest I was opposed to it. I just wanted to, if we're going to have benchmarks, I just want to make sure those benchmarks are meaningful.
Yep.
Cool.
I don't think, and that hopefully.
So there's tangible timelines to the data being collected and then obviously disseminated and then put into practice as far as we can tell, and then you're going to move on to other opportunities. So we have some opportunities to get information and then put that to good use.
And I think it's a good point about the benchmarking. I mean, even our own performance measurement report, we put standards in that are based on best practices, and we compare ourselves, whether it's response time, whether it's an NFPA standard or another best practice, we're always doing that. But now to try, and the other benefit to all this is too, is that there is the power of bringing all these other municipal professionals into a room and start having these dialogues with one another. And that, for me, really is part of that value, is that you're in a room with 15 other very well-respected, professionally managed communities, their chiefs, their village managers, and so you're picking picking on their brains a little bit to learn and better the organization as well.
And this seems much more focused than, say, like a committee on West Central, or you're actually laser focused on specific issues, so you're going to get more work done.
Having the folks from UIC as part of that, they're going to be the ones that are going to be delving into a lot of that data and those numbers for us.
Okay. Thanks. Any further questions regarding this?
The minutes from last week or last month, there's a typo. It's John Papa, not Pape.
John Papa Pape.
I just like looking for typos.
We like Papa.
It's my hobby.
All right. Duly noted.
One final thing, too. I just want to say I do appreciate your support in initiatives like this, because these are not the normal, customary, run-of-the-mill municipal initiatives. So we're trying things differently, and it's nice when the elected officials appreciate that innovation and support those initiatives. So thank you.
You are welcome. All right, so now we need to vote. So
can I read it into the
record? Yes, you may read it in. In fact, that's what you should do.
Consent agenda: A, regular village board meeting minutes, December 11th, 2017. B, special village board meeting minutes, December 15th, 2017. C, memorandum of understanding establishing and participation in the Northern Illinois Benchmarking Cooperative. D, monthly department reports. E, monthly financial report, November 2017. F, monthly performance measurement report. G, accounts payable, November 2017, $2,065,343.22. H, village administrator's report.
Thank you. Now we can take the vote.
Trustee Hennick.
Yes.
Yes.
Trustee Gibbs?
Yes.
Trustee Corsini?
Yes.
Trustee Cargi?
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez?
Yes.
Trustee Conte?
Yes.
Motion carries. Thank you. So we'll move on to item six, which is a consent item for separate consideration.
I move to approve vendor payments for North Avenue TIF, Madison Street TIF, and the Economic Development Fund in the amount of $9,564.
I'll second.
And in a bittersweet moment, since my law firm represents both the School District 90 and School District 200, I would have a common law conflict of interest, so I'm going to recuse myself in this vote, and I ask the clerk not to call my name during the vote.
Okay, we will take the vote. Trustee Gibbs?
Yes.
Trustee Corsini?
Yes.
Trustee Cargi?
Yes.
Trustee Conte?
Yes.
Trustee Koenig?
Yes.
Motion carries. Very good. So moving along here, there are no recommendations of boards, commissions, and committees tonight. There are no unfinished business. So that brings us to new business, item A, which is the minor amendment to the plan development permit for Willard School for the second floor addition. Before we ask Ed or Anthony to talk a little bit, I'd like to get a motion and then second it, and then we'll move to the discussion.
I move to direct the village administrator to process the request from School District 90 for a second story addition at Willard Elementary School as a minor amendment to plan development permit number 2719.
Second.
Thank you.
And for the record again, for the same reasons I stated before, I'm going to recuse myself and ask the clerk not to call my name on this one.
Okay. Welcome.
Well, good evening, and thank you for having us, President Adusi, esteemed trustees, Administrator Palm. We're very grateful to be in front of you this evening. The purpose of our visit this evening is to request a minor amendment to the plan development permit that is in place for Willard School. And I'm very appreciative to have two of my colleagues with me here tonight. I'd like to introduce Anthony Cozy, our Director of Finance and Facilities, and Sven Dahlquist, who is the architect for the project. So I'm going to ask them to come forward and make our presentation.
Hi. I'd just like to say that our board chairperson for facilities, Judy Diagracius, is also here with us. I'm going to actually step over here, as long as I don't have to use the mic.
Maybe you can move the. I think you have to use.
Yeah, hang on.
Or maybe you can use Mike's mic.
If you can get that screen to go back.
Or you can use Mike's mic.
Mike's mic. Because this goes really fast, Eric, when I say slides.
Okay, hang on a second.
It just that's when somebody goes to the audio, you can't hear you.
Okay. I can always.
I would have to get the battery.
Or you can use Mike's mic.
Let's try this. Sometimes you turn on and off.
What I'm saying is.
It was working before, was it?
Yes,
yeah,
it was.
It's going on and off.
Is that podium slide?
No. So as long as you don't stare at my bald spot, I'll sit right here.
Yeah, that's good. As I said, use my
spot. Now that you pointed out. So I can't throw spitballs from
there. Yeah. Just don't look at the bald spot. Okay. So what we're here to discuss is the three-classroom addition that's proposed for Willard School. We have a bid opening tomorrow morning, and we also have a public information meeting tomorrow night as part of our committee of the whole meeting. So for anyone who wants to attend, it's at Roosevelt's auditorium to get a essentially the same but a slightly different presentation. So for those of you, thank you. Those of you who don't know where Willard School is, this is an aerial photo, and if Eric, I'll just point at you.
All right.
Yeah. So the main street is Division with Ashland and Franklin. You see Lathrop there, and there's the Willard site. So the site plan has Willard Elementary School with north facing the right here, and the area of construction will be at the northern end, as you can see. And one of the things that we'll be adding is a multi-purpose room. Right now, there are two large classrooms at that north end. We're going to be restructuring those and remodeling them, making them a bit smaller, and adding a multi-purpose room in the middle of those classrooms. What you'll hear is a common theme for this entire project is that there are space issues. We're not looking to add employees, but there are certain suboptimal educational space issues that are causing various employees to be in areas that I wouldn't call the greatest for childhood learning. We have, and I don't know if you guys have seen pictures or if you attended any one of our other meetings on site, but there are employees that are teaching off in the corner of a hallway or by the elevator. Nothing that I would say is a safety issue from a fire standpoint, but is just not the most optimal place to be having a small learning instruction. So as you can see, we'll be increasing, in addition to that multipurpose room on the first floor, we'll be increasing the size of an office and restructuring who is in there, and that increased office will move into a classroom, so we'll have to re-alter an existing classroom there to the south of that, and obviously putting in new cabinetry and plumbing. Then further south down the hallway near one of the exit doors, we'll be putting in some much-needed storage area because that storage area is being lost by that increase in that office. And then further south in what we call the West Wing, we'll be restructuring another storage to make one small instructional space into two more office spaces. On the second floor, which there is nothing up there at this north end, we'll be putting two new classrooms with a multi-purpose room in between. One of those classrooms is proposed to be a new STEM classroom to match what we did at Lincoln School in 2015, four new offices, and a new bathroom. Then, once again, to make some of those offices, we'll have to alter one of the existing classrooms, once again, putting in new cabinetry and plumbing. Okay, so getting now into more specifics. As you can see, this is a blown-up rendering of that first floor on the north end. As you can see, these are the two new classrooms that are remodeled classrooms, by removing some partition walls between the two larger classrooms that are there now by adding that multi-purpose room or creating a new multi-purpose room. Increasing the size of that office by creating that newer office, as well as changing the existing classroom with that new cabinetry. The second floor, you can see the new STEM classroom that's being proposed, the other classroom that's being proposed, multi-purpose room, as well as the four offices. You'll find out that these offices aren't truly just offices. These are small classroom instructional spaces. So there is learning going on there. It's not just putting people into an office with a desk and a chair, and then the new bathroom. Once again, the remodeled classroom to make for the room for this these offices, and then the new hallway. So I'm going to turn this over to Sven Dahlquist, our architect, to discuss about the elevations from the exterior and talk about how it meets all requirements.
We actually did the addition, the first floor addition, back about 20 years ago, 98, I believe it was. And at the time that we presented that addition, it was always intended that this be a future second floor. So the whole structure and everything is actually in place right now. We've got a concrete slab there, very similar to what we did over at Lincoln School. So essentially what's going on here is we're just trying to mimic the details that the existing building have. The coins, the windows are in the same locations. The height is actually meeting the cornice line of the existing cornice line. I will say that we're not going to be putting a sloped roof on this portion of the building, primarily because of cost. The existing sloped roof is a slate roof, and it's quite an expensive, not only structurally expensive to put up, but also material-wise is a very expensive roof as well. So we're going to be mimicking the flat roof extension that is currently right there. Beyond that, it's pretty straightforward. Like I said, the layout is almost identical to the first floor, so the windows and everything are just an extension up, which is mimicking the entire building, the historical building that's further to the south. The height of the building right now is up to that cornice line is 29.9, as you can see. So we're well within the limits of the height restrictions for the area. We're not increasing the footprint of this at all as well, so as far as impervious ground coverage, there's no increase in it. We've still got the same amount of roof. We've got still the same locations for the downspouts and the gutters. The rainwater runoff is going to be the same. We've talked to the village about parking requirements, and the parking requirements are being met by the project as well, because there's really no increase in staff at all. This is more about pushing different people around, so the same student load as well as faculty. And I think that's pretty much it. It's, like I said, it's pretty straightforward. So,
Any questions?
Any questions for these gentlemen?
I have a couple.
Sorry. Go ahead, Carmela.
Having spent a lot of my children's youth at Willard, I love the school. So the multipurpose rooms are really just classrooms and not somewhere where you, like the Roosevelt multipurpose room where you serve lunch and those types of things. It's not going to be big enough to do those,
right.
Those types
of
activities.
The first floor multipurpose room is probably going to be a gross motor special ed sensory room.
Okay. And, yeah, like the architect said, when this addition was first put in, the anticipation was the foundation was there to go up to the second story, so it's a natural fit. Is this section going to be air conditioned while you're putting it in the new?
There'll be three spaces that will be air conditioned. The STEM classroom, we're trying to be consistent with what we did with Lincoln School, and both multipurpose rooms will be air conditioned.
In addition, the mechanical units that we're putting in there are ready to have coils installed in order to expand. So everything we've done in the past seven to ten years or so, something like that, everything we put in is ready for expansion in order to, because the district has discussed it quite a bit. So for the minimal cost to do it right now, we've been installing them.
Okay. And then the elevator that's current, or that was there when we were there, is that going to change because of the additional use?
The staircase and the elevator stay exactly the same. The only thing we're doing is we're losing a window in the staircase.
Okay. So that elevator is enough to handle
Definitely. The elevator is actually a Lula elevator. It's really more just a usage for somebody who needs it more than it's not even used for students on a regular basis.
Right. Lula, limited use, limited access, I believe.
And then I know you're going out to bid. Is there an estimated budgeted cost for this?
Estimate, I would say, is $1.8
million. $1.8 for the entire project. And you anticipate that this will be completed by the beginning of school?
Yes. So barring any unforeseen circumstances.
So summer school is obviously going to be at Lincoln this
year. That's why we planned it for this year.
Sounds great, and it sounds like it's really more of space utilization issues, not necessarily an increase in student population. You're just trying to maximize the space that you have now.
I think I can speak for the four of us. Most of the projects that we've done probably since 2010 has been for space utilization. If you remember, when Sven did the life safety survey in 2009, we married it with that space utilization report and been trying to maximize that ever since.
And you are, even though you're not required, you're still going to have a community open meeting at
tomorrow
your
night.
Board meeting so that folks can come in and ask any questions or express any concerns. I doubt that there's going to be anything, but I'm appreciative of the fact that the school district recognizes that the community has that opportunity
to come in and
speak. So thank you for that. And I'm excited. Sounds great.
Yeah, Susan. How many square feet will that be?
That's a good question.
It's about 5,000 square feet.
Okay. And I love the fact that you designed it 20 years ago for this to happen. That's good forward thinking. Is there any other, is this the end of the project as you see it, or 5 years, 10 years down the road, do you have other plans going forward?
It's the end of what we've done on the north end. If something else needs to be done, we've discussed certain things. We've looked out going out towards the west. We have the field to the west, and we could easily extend the one-story addition on the back. That could extend out and get a further two classrooms. It's nothing that's needed right now, so we really haven't gone into too much detail, and we really haven't studied it too much.
And as we did with Lincoln School, we tried to limit it to what we needed, with the footprint being the same, knowing that anything of a further expansion would take away playground.
Yeah, there is something that we discussed as well, as far as they've got beautiful attic spaces in these buildings, and those could be made into learning spaces as well. So it's a matter of just what we want to, and yeah, exactly.
He's like, blood just drained from my body. But okay.
So there's a lot of, what I'm trying to say is there's a lot of options that we really haven't discussed.
At this point,
what they need.
Next 5 years should be free and clear.
If you look at our long-range facility plan on our website, there's nothing in the 5 years that shows any more expansion after this.
All right. And coins, that's a new word. See, are those the
corner? Yes. So the corner pieces, those are coins. It's Q-U-O-I-N-S.
I've never heard it. Okay, it's great. Thank you.
Well, one other question. Are you going to put additional or different lighting So that on the top, obviously whatever lighting you have is going to.
The lighting up. Actually, we discussed raising it higher, but we didn't want to raise it higher because we like the cutoff levels right now. Okay. We didn't want to, have more. The higher you get them, the more light's going to shine on the neighbors. So we kept them at the current height, so the same cutoff. There's not going to be a change. And, you know, we can't really, if somebody complains about it, we're going to say the lights are the same lights, essentially.
Okay, so there won't be any additional spillover.
No, and we feel also on the north end with the parking lot there, the lights being where they're at is optimal for nighttime.
So, I think this is a great plan. My only request would be communicate to the neighbors around the Willard. I mean, I know that's just going to be part of your plan regardless in terms of when you're under construction, believe it or not. I mean, often people, what's going on over there? What's going on over there? So, I mean, if there's flyers you can provide the neighbors or whatever, just anything you can do to, you guys probably already talked
Ed
about
and I have walked door to door in
yeah, no,
previous
door-to-door
projects.
Door works too. Anything that would give the neighbors a little indication of what's going on. I mean, we try to do it. We'll do it for you as well.
Thank you.
You know, part of our website, we'll put it on. We'll part of the newsletter, we'll do it. But, you know, sometimes you have to hit them before something, you know, actually sets in. So appreciate if you guys could help us on that.
No problem.
Awesome. Good luck. It's good stuff.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we need a vote. So I'll ask the, please take the vote and not call the rest.
Trustee Corsini.
Yes.
Trustee Cargi.
Yes.
Trustee Conti.
Yes.
Trustee Hennick.
Yes.
Trustee Gibbs.
Yes.
Motion passed.
Great. All right. Thank you. Thank you so much. Enjoy your evening. And if you have nothing going on, go ahead and go to Francesca's.
That's where they'll be?
That's where they're going to be.
Please know how much we appreciate you all's partnership. It means a great deal.
You guys are the best. Thank you. Here, enjoy. All right. So we'll move on to our next minor amendment. If I can get a motion and a second to 9B, I'd appreciate it.
Motion to grant approval for a minor amendment to the plan development permit at Bonnie Bray and Thomas and pass an ordinance amending the plan development permit for 1001-1111 Bonnie Bray, modifying the development schedule and extending the deadline to commence construction to July 30th, 2018.
Your second?
Second.
Second.
Okay. Very good. Any discussions on this? We do have Art here in the audience, so if you'd like to come to the podium in case any of the, unless you want to tell us something, and as well as if, how's it going?
Good evening. Well, everything is going fine. We are trying to market the property. Obviously, the real estate market is a little bit soft now. We saw some signs of improvement in the last couple of weeks. And hoping it's going to get better. Obviously, it's a private development, so there is a financing involved, and you know,
right.
I don't know. And there are some glitches in the development ordinance, so we need to go back to the DRB to fix them. So that also requires the time extension, so we can go there and then glitches. Come back.
Yeah, there were some issues with the setbacks. Okay.
Yes, exactly.
Okay,
they don't seem. Major, but they have to. I mean, they're major that
no,
in the sense
their conditions,
that they have to go back.
Yeah, they were
right. So, but they're not.
Yes.
Things that we can't move.
No.
Past, hopefully.
How are pre-sales going? You know.
Well, we have two units pre-sold. We have some interest. The problem is people like to kick the tires. So once we start building, they will. You know.
Yeah.
Even when you build it, they will come. But I can't tell to the bank.
Right.
So we need to, you know, just. Put more time in and more effort, and we'll get them.
What kind of marketing are you doing?
Well, we are just now expanding into more online presence, and we talk to local real estate marketing people, and so we'll be there's some more of real estate and print media and more visual media. More brochures and flyers and the sign will be changing the property. So,
okay.
And more of a personal door-to-door and you know, talking to people. We're looking to pre-sell at least two more. So four, yeah. The more the better, obviously, because you know it's...
But is it, 'cause it's 8 units, if I remember correctly?
15 units.
15
yeah.
What sign is on the property now? Maybe I haven't been by there
just
recently.
The basic.
The basic 4x8 sign with the rendering, but so we're going to make it more appealing and more attractive.
Appealing.
Okay, I mean, any further questions for Art? You know, we want this to succeed, Art, so...
Thank you, so do
you
we.
Know, we want...
So,
we, although we, you know, I'm sure this was will go unanimous, but, you know, the sooner the better, like you said. So,
of
you know, and you're going into your spring, so... Yeah.
And I don't know if it's my place to say it now, but the changes that we are seeking at DRB... They're not real changes to the what you already proposed. Nothing really changes. It's just certain things were omitted from the ordinance, and we want them to be to put them back in. But nothing is going to change on the facade or the actual location of the building. So everything that we presented is going to stay as is. It's just basically housekeeping type thing.
Okay. Well, we'll let our development review board review that, and hopefully that can get solved. Yep. So again, we're you know, whatever we in the village can help. Do within our power, we'll do it.
Thank you very much.
So I'll ask the clerk to please take the vote on this.
Trustee Kargi.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Conti.
Yes.
Trustee Hennick.
Yes.
Trustee Gibbs.
Yes.
Trustee Corsini.
Yes.
Motion passed.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Good luck, Art.
Good luck.
Thank you. Okay, moving on to 9C. Which is the, if I can get a motion on 9C, and then we can discuss it.
I'll move to pass an ordinance amending Title 8 of the Village Code with regard to false statements to governmental agencies, which would allow the Village to issue ordinance citations for false statements.
Can you second?
I'll second.
Okay, thanks, Patty. So I'm going to maybe let Eric explain you know, why we did this.
Yep. This will be a probably a tag team here between myself and the village attorney. So at the conclusion of the last meeting a couple months ago, there was some concerns and some questions and some follow-up to ask about, you know, when you have people that are making comments and statements under oath, you know, how do we provide another tool for the village to provide some accountability to that? So in your packet, you'll find a memo that really is the work of the village attorney that outlines some things that you could do in that regard. So one of the ideas is, our suggestions was, you could refer someone for a criminal prosecution. Obviously, that's a very high standard for something, and that's assuming that the state's attorney would even be interested in something like that. So that's a very dramatic approach to take. You could issue an existing ordinance citation and try to cobble together some parts of our code that would enforce that. And then, so that is something you could do, but really if you wanted to go that route, the really key there is to take that a step further. And in number three below, talk about a village code amendment that would make it essentially a local ordinance violation if someone goes ahead and makes a false statement to the village. And I'll let Greg dovetail onto that and in terms of the genesis of this recommendation.
Right. So we're talking about the St. Vincent zoning application, obviously. And the board asked for options. The options have been presented. The ordinance that's before you tonight is modified from one that my office drafted for the Village of Carpentersville, which has been on their books now for a number of years. Carpentersville was having problems with in public works contracts, contacts, building permit applicants, and so on, lying to the village. People would say that they were providing the village with certain services or goods, or they had building permit fees that were based on a percentage of the cost of construction, and people were lying when providing these things. The village wanted a tool to hold people to account, so they put this ordinance on the books. My colleague Jim Rhodes drafted the ordinance. It is based on the federal and state of Illinois False Claims Acts. It is illegal to lie to the federal government about a material fact to obtain a benefit. It's also illegal to do so in a crime to the state of Illinois and to municipalities. This ordinance gives you, at the local level, the ability to seek an ordinance violation against someone who lies about a material fact. If you do that, it's punishable by a fine only. It comes either to your administrative adjudication, your in-house court here in this room, or to the circuit court before a judge over at the Maybrook Courthouse at First Avenue and the Eisenhower. The idea behind this ordinance is to have a disincentive for people to lie. You collect information from people and rely on it when doing transfer stamps. What is the value of your transaction? That is the basis of the tax. Same with building permits. You charge a percentage of the cost of construction. If someone lies to you about that and you find out about it, you have a tool now to say, we want you to pay what you should have, or else we may levy or pursue an ordinance violation against you. If the village decides to pursue an ordinance violation against someone, a judge, either the administrative law judge here or the judge in the Maybrook courthouse, have to hear the evidence and find that the village has proven that someone lied about a material fact. The mere fact that you issue an ordinance violation doesn't mean you're successful. It's like any other case, a traffic ticket, anything that you that the village pursues still requires that it be proven. So this is simply a tool to hold people to account to tell the truth to the village.
Have any municipalities in your experience ever tied on ramifications to their business license as a result of falsifying information?
Sure. Yes, a business license ordinances, and I believe yours has the standard language in the ordinance, requires that the applications for a business license be truthfully and fully completed. And a condition of having the business license is that it's truthfully completed. We've seen in communities, including in this area, where a business owner will get in trouble because they, let's say, sold cigarettes to people who are under the age of 18. They then sell the business to someone else after their business license is revoked, but they still maintain an interest in the business. They lie about that to the municipality. They say that the bad actor, the prior owner, no longer is involved. When we find out that they are still involved, then you revoke again, and then you start up another process, you know, like considering potential criminal charges or ordinance violations.
I mean, you brought up the reason this is before us with the St. Vincent's thing. They're a business, they're in town. You guys have heard me talk about enforcing. I know Eric is sick of hearing me talk about how we need to jump on the business vans around town for not having, you know, enforcing our permit rules. But if we as a village issue a business license to someone, there's a level of trust now that the village is giving them our blessing to do business in town. For instance, with the St. Vincent thing, it is our belief, and you know that's as calm as Gibbs knows how to word things, it's our belief that he was untruthful in what he presented to the DRB. Is it not in the village's responsibility or best interest to, you know, at best, you know, what? Are we putting that business license now on probation? If this happens again, you're done in town? Or, you know, because a lot of, you know, I'm a contractor. A lot of the boards that we have, the presenters to these boards are professionals. They're plumbers. They're construction guys. They're roofers. They're all, we're not those people. People come before us just like tonight. We ask them a question. But they're the professionals. They know how that air conditioning unit's going to go in. We have to take them for their word. If someone has a business license in town, and if we allow that to go on unpenalized, for lack of better words, I honestly feel we're doing a disservice to our citizens. That because the citizens, I'm always telling people, before you hire anybody, make sure they have a business license. That's that because the village has given that company our blessing to work in town. They've been bonded. They've proved their insurance. They've proved worthy to work in town. I honestly believe that if it gets to the point where we are now fining someone, there should be a ramification to their business license in town. Either one strike, two strike, three, whatever you guys deserve to decide. But I don't think it should go unnoticed on their business portfolio in town.
Right. I guess if I may add, I was going to ask a similar question or similar suggestion, is that 750 or 500, I think what we were talking about at the time was 10,000 or 12,000 error expense or wherever the statement was. Frankly, if you pay $750 for that type of investment doing business, it's I'll pay the $5, so to speak, and go on and not feel like I'm being punished for committing any type of fraud against the village. I guess what I was going to suggest is, I think what you're suggesting is some form of suspension, some form of banning the person from doing business for the village for 3 to 5 years. Some, we can talk about what that ban or suspension should be, but some ramification other than the $750 fine.
So as a non-home rule community, the village is limited in the fines that it can assess. And under state law, which sets the limits in this case, the most you can do is $750 for an ordinance violation. You do have the authority to define crimes. You could make this a misdemeanor punishable by up to, I think it's 6 months of imprisonment is what state law allows. We chose to go the ordinance route because you can put it in front of an administrative law judge or a judge at the courthouse and be subject only to the civil preponderance of the standard evidence, preponderance of the evidence standard instead of beyond the reasonable doubt. We can certainly, if the board it likes, provide more options that tie violations of this ordinance in with business licensing or contracting with the village. The village, you all decide who you contract with. You could create a regime that if people violate this ordinance where village contractors, they are debarred or prohibited from getting more village work. You know, those are options we can lay out. With regard to business license discipline, you do have a process in your code for holders of business licenses. If they get in trouble, they get called up for a hearing before the village president, who decides what's done to their business license, whether it's a fine, a suspension, or a revocation. So we do have existing tools to address those issues. And this ordinance provides a further basis for the village, because you want to have options in a given case to address these situations.
I mean, this was a strange case. It was an institution, the church, coming before the board on what could arguably be deemed a minor issue, the color of the window trim. I know stories of Glen Ellen where the guy's roof was 2 inches too tall, and the village of Glen Ellen made him take the whole roof off the brand new house and put a new roof in that had a different pitch. Somebody had to pay for that. So I'm just saying, as a board here, it's our responsibility to look out for the citizenry, and if there is someone that has been fined by the village, how do we now say, all right, go do it again? Somewhere along the line, I think.
No, I think, Mike, you're raising a good point, and I think we're answering it by saying.
No, I'm happy to hear that.
Yeah, the code that addresses that. I think there's another. The other issue that you brought up was village contractors, which I thought would have been in a.
They're protected against on their contracts, right? We're protected.
I would think
about
that.
Those.
So to have another level of how do we find a village contractor just confused me a little bit there. I mean, it should already be in their contract that we sign with them.
Is it in the contract
that
we have with them?
Wait, all right, we're talking about a lot of different.
Okay,
things.
I know that's.
No, when we go out to bid and we have a contract with the contractor, there should be stipulations in those contracts. About
right, there's two issues. One, Mike is bringing up is business license. If I'm a business licensed person in room force and I lied, there's consequences. Switching subjects.
Just want to be clear.
Yeah, Greg brought up there's under the village, if you're doing work for the village and you're a village contractor, as Carmel and I just said, that should be protected under our contract. And in our contract, it should say if you falsify something that there's legal consequences or maybe a misdemeanor.
Rez mentioned people doing business with the village, and what options does the village have to not do business with people who lie to the village? The primary thing you have, you decide who you contract with, right? You don't decide who you issue permits to, because anyone who completes a permit application deserves a permit if they meet your conditions, right? When it comes to contracting, the parties to the contract have to act in good faith and fair dealing. It is every contract has that stipulation, and if someone breaches a contract, they are liable to the village potentially for damages for doing so. And there are state laws that provide criminal penalties for lying to the village, including under the State False Claims Act. What this ordinance will do is give you a tool rather than going to the state's attorney's office to pursue a perjury charge if it's under oath or a false claims charge if it's, a fake invoice. So someone just writes an invoice and gives it to the village and you pay it when they didn't do anything that they said they did. Well, maybe instead of pursuing a criminal sanction, we pull out this ordinance and we pursue that instead. And it offers an option.
Okay. But it's protected and from the, if there's a larger problem, I mean, there's a contractual obligation.
Right.
So I think the purpose of this was, is if you ever go to, and I know all of you have gone to a development review board, you know, Cliff says, raise your right hand, and everyone raises their right hand, do you solemnly swear? And everyone solemnly swears. And so we do have that, you know, sort of way of you're taking an oath to tell the truth. And we hope that everyone is telling the truth. But sometimes, you know, we don't have, I don't think this is a systemic issue in River Forest. I think it just kind of pops up every once in a while. And so the thought behind this, I believe, was could we put another tool in place that if and when someone perhaps says a false statement, that instead of, you know, pursuing, this is what we would pursue. We would find them, you know, because we don't have a judge and jury. I mean, sure, we can have them go to the adjudication, and our hope is that, hey, don't do it again. You know, we're in River Forest. We don't like when people lie to us. So they do take the oath, they, you know, but there's no real way of finding them, and this was the way to find them. Was this particular ordinance. I think it's probably a good first step in that way. Like I said, I don't believe it's a systemic issue in River Forest, so it's not like, hey, we've got so many people lying to us, we've got to really build this wall. Anyway.
No, I actually like the solution that you guys came up with. I mean, I think everyone, taking the oath is somewhat pro forma. I mean, I don't think you really contemplate what you're saying. So one of the things that Eric had mentioned to me was the possibility of having something written that gives a justification not only of the ordinance but also the consequence of the ordinance. So then, you know, again, it's maybe it's belts and suspenders, but I think it's a good idea so that you just basically let the person know that if you lie, there are consequences.
There are consequences.
Meaningful, because I do think the perjury charge is a sledgehammer. Yeah. I doubt the state attorney's office would take the case anyway.
The state attorney probably wouldn't do it.
Right. I don't think that's an effective remedy. So I think that this actually sort of achieves that middle ground.
Well, I had that same question in terms of. Would we perhaps encourage, like, say, beginning of DRB meeting to spell out this is part of our ordinance before they, you know, it's not anything long, but just kind of when you say we're going to swear in, please know that
you
this
are
is
under
a consequence,
oath and, you have, you
and
know,
there's the potential of a fine. You know, just even something as simple as that, that people are aware of a greater.
Yeah, we're not going to put this on in a drawer.
And then in terms of how you would anticipate that we would find out or know or the process of, you know, we hear that perhaps somebody lied about something.
You only know, like Mike said, unless you see something that went up that wasn't correct in the development review plan or in the plan development or what happened just recently, you know, where there was a mistake or misinformation. That's why I said it's not, I don't believe this is a systemic issue. I mean, there's something wrong. I just think that this allows us to just, you know, ensure that we have a tool that allows us to find someone that may consider possibly lying to River Forest.
But on the transfer tax, we don't independently verify the amount stated, the purchase price is the purchase price?
Well, you have to have a contract, don't you?
We get that.
Okay, that was
right.
Okay, that's what I was saying.
So in a real estate transaction, you have to submit a declaration to the state, to Cook County, and to the village with the value of the deal. My understanding is that the village requires the deed and then the completed state and county form, but I don't think a closing statement is, if someone wants to lie, they're going to lie to everyone about it, but if you later learn out that there was a falsification and everyone was lied to, you have another remedy.
And we do get the contract, right?
You get the forms that are filled out for the county,
state. No, it's just you swear on those forms that you are accurately depicting the consideration, because the state and county take a percentage of the sale as their tax.
So
as
they're
well.
Lying to everybody.
They are.
Yeah.
But do we have a criteria when we authorize a business to do business in River Forest? Do we have some criteria, or do we let anybody? Who wants
to
do business in
River
Forest?
They just fill out a form, got a license, they get bonded,
and
they have to show proof of insurance.
Okay, no,
certain businesses.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe.
So then, is there any criteria there, or do we have any, meaning does the village have any leverage there in terms of, do we tell them, okay, as long as you do business, you don't do anything illegal, you don't do anything, you know, committing fraud, can you then suspend or revoke their license? at that point? Do we have another avenue that way?
So the village does have a business licensing regime, and we can review that in light of this ordinance to make sure that one of the conditions on keeping a business license is that you're in compliance with all the village code, right?
Okay.
And which would include, if you adopt this ordinance tonight, this ordinance. That way, if someone, you know, meaningfully violates this because they lie to the village about something important, then they would appear before the village president on a notice for a hearing on their business license. And that is, we will review that and provide some feedback.
Okay.
That's the deal.
Okay.
And there is.
Okay. So the only way, though, I just have some issues with materiality, right? I mean, how are we going to determine what's material unless you're going to the adjudication? It just puts everybody kind of in an awkward position. Like, for instance, the situation that happened. We keep forgetting that the petitioner has a responsibility when they go before the DRB, so they can't pawn off all the responsibility to their contractor. So, you know, they jointly share in what happened, and you can't pretend like we didn't know what was going on when you're going to put this representative up before everybody. So I don't want to exonerate the petitioner because they're the ones that are out there getting getting the actual petition. So it was a unique situation, and I'm not sure how you would ever prove who lied to who, and it's going to be a he said, she said. And so I just feel a little uncomfortable with that situation. If this is like an open-ended ordinance where it can apply to a variety of situations, my only concern is just the materiality. You know, how do we determine what's material?
The intent is to have it apply in more broad sense. But, you know, you're totally right. I mean, the enforcement is going to be the challenge. But it's like most of, you know, what we have. I mean, I think the more we can provide the business license, the person that's coming in for the permit or coming before the plan development with an ordinance like this, showing that, hey, if it's a material lie, you're going to have to pay. Yeah, I mean, is it? The hope is that they hear it, they see it, they understand it, and they will abide by it.
But I agree we need to communicate this. So if people are coming up and, you know, being sworn in for either a zoning hearing or any other testimony, that they understand that, you know, it's not just a perfunctory and that there is consequences for doing that. So as long as we're going to be using it to communicate, you know, that we're serious about people telling the truth, then, I just want to make sure we're going to do that. So
yes. Yes, and double yes.
I hope we don't ever have to
use
it.
No, that's the
whole.
At least
it is some protection.
Okay. Okay. That's great discussion. Thank you. So let's go ahead and take the vote on this, please.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Conte.
Yes.
Trustee Hennick.
Yes.
Trustee Gibbs.
Yes.
Trustee Corsini.
Yes.
Trustee Cargi.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Very good. That kind of ends our regular scheduled meeting. So if I can get a motion to move into executive session.
I move to go into executive session to discuss the appointment, employment, compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal of specific employees of the village and collective negotiating matters between the village and its employees or its representatives, or deliberations concerning salary schedules for one or more classes of employees and litigation involving the village that is pending.
Second.
Thank you. Okay, so go around, I guess. Don't we just...
Move in,
yeah.
Move in
a second.
Yep.
Go ahead.
Trustee Corsini.
Yes.
Trustee Cargi.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Conte.
Yes.
Trustee Hennick.
Yes.
Trustee Gibbs.
Yes.
Because we want to all go into open session. Okay. If I can.
One thing I want to bring up.
We have to go into
open
session.
Do we have to vote for that? Or?
No, let's go into open session and then bring it up. So if I can get a motion to go into open session.
Sorry. Stickler for the rules.
Yep.
Second.
Okay. Now we're in open session. Mike.
Okay.
Roll call.
Yes.
Trustee Corsini.
Here.
We're so confused.
Trustee Cargi.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Here.
Trustee Conte. Trustee Hennick.
Here.
Trustee Gibbs.
Here.
President Adusi.
Here. Now Mike.
Okay. This is silly and nonsensical, but when I drove by Lake Street and the river the other day,
okay,
we own that last property, right?
Yep.
Yes.
We need to shovel that snow.
Okay.
What do you mean? Where the lot? There's no
where we tore down the two flat.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, but
well, on the sidewalk.
Can I ask a question about the house next to that?
It's fallen down too.
Yeah,
they
how
did
do we
some
issue
tuck point
building
work.
Permits for that. That I mean, the house is clearly.
All right, so there's three. There's the home that we took down.
Right.
Then there's the second, the first, now the first home, and then there's another one. Then the second one in is where building permits were issued.
Right. It was in bad shape.
There, yeah. How are they going to, I mean, how is that not 50% or more damp? I mean, they have to shore up all the foundations of that house. How
they had the same thing going on with it. The zigzag line down
can.
The tuck
I mean,
point. The second
yeah,
floor
the
was
I'd have to check
off.
The cliff,
so
but I know.
So is your question how, or is the question
I mean,
is why?
Why?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah.
It's like at some point, you know, if the house is just whole in such there. Bad. I mean, if that house can be repaired, then the house on William, that's historic. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's just
well,
it's just
it,
completely off its,
it,
off
it,
its
it,
foundation.
It all could get repaired. The question is why?
Does the village have any idea what we're going to do with that one that we bought?
8241. I think in a long term, I could see some sort of flood improvement over there as a long term play.
And that was we were trying
was the
to going for grants to try to do some retention.
Kind of do a reservoir.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I mean, the next to that,
no more things
advantage.
On the list. I got my.
All right, that one's off the list. All right, that's right. I have it in my. All right, any more issues, questions for esteemed staffer? All right.
Well said.
All right.
Second.
All right.
Aye.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Happy marriage.